This is Karen Lyle with SailSport Talk, and I am sitting in the berth of the Maiden, and we are in the San Francisco Bay, and I'm with Courtney Koos.
Good morning. Very excited to be here today.
And so, Courtney, you are a United States representative on this maiden voyage.
I am, yeah. So, obviously, the original team, Dawn Riley, was on there. So, she's now based in New York and was the token American in that crew. And I've had the good fortune of being on the crew this time around. So, it's very special to be here.
So, what has this experience been like on the Maiden? How long have you been on this voyage?
So I joined the boat in December, about a month after they left the UK. So I flew to Malta to meet them there. And it's just been incredible ever since. I've done about 20,000 miles on the boat. So the most miles I've ever done on a single boat, which is really incredible. Made it over halfway around the world now. So that's very exciting. And just kind of just blown away by the support we've received here in the States. I think for us, it's really lucky that the release of the documentary has coincided with a lot of our stopovers here. So obviously there are a lot of people that are really eager to see the boat because they know the history of the project and what Tracy and her team accomplished 30 years ago. And so for us to now be riding on the coattails of that legacy and able to channel it in a direction where we're fundraising for our charities and really making it about the kids this time around is really special.
Is there any particular experience that you had on this voyage that you would like to tell us about?
I think it's very overwhelming to see the support we received, particularly with kids, and just kind of to see the looks on their faces when we come into port. I think that's kind of the most rewarding part of it for us is having the ability to just try to be the best role models we can be for these kids. And I think for me growing up, I was really fortunate to have a lot of strong female role models that really supported my sailing and supported my academic endeavors and my career. I was working as a consultant in DC for a while. So I think was really fortunate to have those role models growing up, and now to have the role to kind of be that person for somebody else, I think kind of makes it all worth it. And to have the ability to partner with some charities that are doing incredible work all around the world.
This is Karen Lyle of SailSport Talk with a shout out for the Jazz Cup, a race that started as a rivalry between South Beach Yacht Club and Benicia Yacht Club that is still going strong 32 years later. This year, the Jazz Cup goes to South Beach Yacht Club with Nukalavi, owned by Kennedy and Prisco. Congratulations! Here are just a few of the boats that participated. What great names they have. C'est la vie, H&H, Quila, E-Ticket, Grin and Bear, Solace, Savoy Fair, Nukalavi, Wicked, Highlighter, Tupelo Honey, Mist, Reality Check, Inconceivable, Invictus, and Stratocaster. After the race, we enjoyed a cold glass of beer on tap, brought to us by the Jazz Cup sponsor, Firestone Walker Brewing Company. This is Karen Lyle of SailSport Talk.
All right, thank you for that, and welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you, coast to coast, border to border, around the world on the American Forces Radio Network. We've got a couple of interviews today on Sail Sport Talk. Our co-host, Karen Lyle, as always, is here. Did you have a nice holiday weekend?
I did, and I just came over on the ferry again this morning, and it was beautiful out there. A little bit of fog on the water.
Oh, very nice.
Nothing new.
I did shows the last 3 days, but you know, it's show business. Show must go on. We're going to have our friend Malcolm Page, Olympic gold medalist with U.S. Sailing, in studio here in just a second. We have a few minutes with Robbie Doyle. And Karen, give Robbie the introduction he deserves.
Robbie, you were just inducted into the National Sailing Hall of Fame, and you are not just a sailor and not just a sailmaker, but a legend in both. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. Yep.
And I have, I understand that that you just recently did the sails, designed the sails for a super yacht. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we, our principal business has been super yachts probably for the last 25 years. It really helped me grow internationally. And we were given the challenge of boats like Maltese Falcon, which to some look like a square rigger, to others it looks like three-winged sails, but it was a completely innovative rig where with a push of a button, so all the sails deploy and come out, and with another button that can all go in, you trim by pushing buttons. The boat literally can be sailed by remote control. It's over 1 million pounds, and it will do 20-plus knots. So that was our biggest, probably, innovation, and we've also had the pleasure of building the biggest sails in the world, each iteration that's come along, the next biggest one, we've been the one been asked to build it. So that's just put us in a very special little niche market, which has been fun because it's always taken a lot of engineering to make the next biggest thing possible.
Well, I remember the Maltese Falcon when it was here in the San Francisco Bay. That was an impressive boat. All the little boats come up around, and sometimes she has difficulty navigating because everybody wants to see.
Yeah, now they enjoy that, and that's obviously was Tom Perkins' home port, so very important for him to go in there.
Rick, you have a question also for did you know that?
Rob, when you talk about making sales, you know, I think about how, I mean, sales in general, I'm sure there's new research done in technology, but what about the material? Because, like, even in athletics, Nike or Adidas will say, this is new cotton blend that's moisture wicking or dry fit or some sort of new thing. What about material? Is it the same stuff that you've been using 20 years ago, or is it all new synthetic stuff?
All new. When I got into sail making, well, actually, when I got into it as a kid, and I can go back to the 1960s when I started making sails, and it was just nylon and Dacron. And today, all these really big sails are built at a principal amount of carbon in the sails combined with mylar, combined with light taffetas, sometimes for color reasons, sometimes for barrier coats, for UV protection, et cetera. So they really are all composites now for the big sails, although there still exists Dacron and nylon. The spinnakers you still see built out of nylon, because they need to be very light and still strong for their weight to go downwind when there's not that much wind apparent. So anyways, it's a continuing evolution of materials. And, you know, frankly, right now I'm working with my son, who's been a big help in developing our super yacht sails. He's now been hired to design and build an airship that's 400 feet that's going to sit up, you know, 12 miles above ground to be a communication satellite. And it's the same, I'm working with him on the fabric because it's the same challenge. It's as light and as strong as you can make it, and it'll be durable.
There he is, Robbie Doyle. And for more information on checking this stuff out, do you have a website or a Twitter?
Yeah, doylesails.com is the company website. I don't have a personal website, and I do not do Twitter.
All right. Thanks for being on the show, Robbie Doyle, everybody. And we also, as I mentioned, have in studio our friend Malcolm Page, who is with us, the pride of New South Wales, but also the pride of good old United States of America, because he is the chief of Olympic sailing with the United States Sailing Association. He got a gold medal in the Olympics at Beijing, also in London. Malcolm, welcome back. And I kind of wonder sometimes, because as much as you love your home country of Australia, but now that you are given this great responsibility with the United States and you see the American flag, is it kind of like, I mean, I guess there's room in your heart for both, right?
Of course. And actually, when you think about it, the three-letter code for both countries is the same letters, just a little bit mixed up here or there, depending which way you look at it. And actually, the first time I got to wear Team USA, I suppose the US Olympic Committee's clothing, was at the Pan American Games just recently. And I always wondered what it would feel like that first time. And actually, it felt really good. And obviously, working with those athletes, I was really proud.
By the way, why is it that Australia, despite that you have the red, white, and blue flag, you guys always wear the green and gold for the national team?
I'm really not sure. And actually, I must admit, those sporting colours are pretty gross. You're very proud when you put them on, and you obviously wear around something like the Olympic Games, you'll wear them very proudly for those 2.5 weeks, but then they sit in your cupboard from there on and never be worn again.
Gotcha.
Malcolm, tell us about the Pan American Games. What happened there?
It was a great event for the sailing team. We were in a little town south of Lima called Paracas. And what an incredible place it was. It was obviously on the Pacific Ocean, and it's a big bay that was sort of encompassed by a national park, desert national park, and great sea breezes there. Although it was winter down there, it was still quite balmy and beautiful, but the water is cold. There was 11 events in the sailing down there, and 7 of them being Olympic classes. And it was a great event for Team USA. We came away with 7 medals,
wow.
two gold, 3 silver, and obviously 3 bronze. Oh, sorry, that doesn't add up well. 2 bronze. but it was a great event. And included within that, USA did qualify in a further 2 events for the Tokyo 2020 Olympic Games.
And, you know, it's funny, with any athlete, you're at an event and it's an exciting time and you've been in an Olympic village, but when you're down there for the event, what kind of advice do you impart on your athletes to how to unwind and how to be responsible? And by then, they know they need their sleep and they're adults, but still, I mean, it's like you can get a little starry-eyed sometimes.
And that was what I think one of the great benefits of this Pan American Games. And it was my first one. Obviously, I'd been to Pacific Games and obviously Olympic Games. But the cool thing about the Pan American Games for me, that it was a real version of the Olympic Games. Alas, a little bit smaller. But it was true that we had the village, we had the food halls, we had the hoobaloo that happens at the games and all the security that you have to pass through and all the rules, the extra rules they put in place because of the media that comes along with it. Mm-hmm. So it was great for our athletes to experience that, because now when they are selected for the Tokyo 2020 Games, they obviously go in with that little bit more knowledge on what it'll be like. And I know for me, when I was an athlete, my first Olympic Games were favourites, world champions, and we choked. So for them to gain that experience and now take that, you know, with a year to run into the Tokyo Games, is going to be a huge benefit.
Well, you just spent 3 weeks in Tokyo for the trials. Tell us what the weather conditions are like there. That's a challenging place to sail.
It is a challenging, and firstly, the Japan summer onshore is horrendous. It is somewhere between 90 or even sometimes some days 100 degrees plus Fahrenheit. And then you add 95% humidity that they have there in the summer, and it is stifling hot. And many of our athletes have to spend long hours on the shore either waiting for wind, waiting because of too much wind, or even just doing boat work, maintenance on their equipment. And sitting in a concrete boat park in that heat is really difficult. And so that's one of the challenges we have that we have to overcome. We're looking to build container bases that will have air conditioning and comforts and, you know, entertainment within them. Obviously, there's part of that is for the athletes' relaxation, but then also having a war room and a technology area that we can help our coaches prepare for the day and go in with hopefully knowledge that no one other country will have on the weather and the situation that'll occur. But then when you get out in the water, the bay there at Inoshima is sort of open to the Pacific Ocean, and it will deliver anything. And we did see anything over those last 3 weeks that we were there. We had days of no wind. We had days of too much wind. And actually, when the wind comes in, it is huge seaway. We probably have a 2 to 3 meter swell that rolls in, and then the wind chop on top. So we had a fair few breakages, a fair few injuries for our athletes at the time there, but it's a good little reminder of what could be delivered next year. And of course, certainly when I arrived, it coincided with the typhoon. Not only was it a very rough landing, but also we had the venue closed for 4 days with this typhoon when it passed through, and you have waves breaking over the break wall and filling the car park, the boat park, full of water. So it's pretty unique place in that sense.
Yeah, we've seen tsunamis there before. One last question for you. It's a two-parter. When you work for United States Sailing, number one, are you under scrutiny? Like if you went to the Pan American Games and came back with no medals, they say, we'll get somebody else for the Olympics, like your bosses. And then secondly, and luckily you came away with medals, but secondly, can you do scouting like other sports? Can you look at it and say, this guy tacks this way or he panics when this happens? Do you do that kind of advanced scouting?
Yes. Well, let me answer the last one first. Of course, we do a lot of scouting, and that's the whole point of going to a lot of these events, is to measure yourself against the international competition. So the coach's major role, especially when the racing is on, is not only to look at their own athlete, but also spy on the other athletes and try to grab little tidbits of how they do things, why they may be faster in those conditions, or how do they race from a strategic standpoint, and how can those, I guess, their strengths be implemented into our athletes, which may be their weakness. So there's definitely part of that role and trying to, you know, maybe catch up to the best, or if you are the best, to stay ahead of the rest. And then, of course, what you talk about, you know, performance-related, sport is always like that. And the Olympic Games...
Results-oriented business.
It's much the same, but it's also what I love. Mm. You know, I cut my teeth in that when I was an athlete, and you know, I love that. I love that pressure. I love going to those games. I love going to those events. And I know there's a noose around my neck. There's always been a noose around my neck, no matter what chair I've been sitting in. And I really do love it, and that's why I love sport.
You got one more quick one? We got about a minute.
Yeah, you have maybe about 6 to 8 different events that are happening between now and the Olympic the Olympic Games in 2020. Which one is coming up this December and September?
Yeah, we've got a few what we call class world championships that will be held later this year. They're all going to be in the Southern Hemisphere because obviously they follow the summer sun. But we have our two skiff classes and the catamaran class, which is a foiling class. They will have their world championships in New Zealand, in Auckland, New Zealand, the first week of December. And then what we call the single-handed heavyweight men's class. So it's for the big boys, they're 220 pounds or thereabouts. They will have their class world championships in the second week of December in Melbourne, Australia. And the unique thing about that, not only is it individual athlete qualification for the Tokyo Games, because only one boat or you know a pair of athletes can go to the Olympic Games, but also it's the country qualification. So USA must qualify themselves to the Tokyo Games before the athlete can be selected. So that is a two-part process that will be happening for some of those four remaining classes later this year. And actually, at the end of this month, we're going to have our two windsurfing classes, the men and women windsurfers class, will have their world championships in Lake Garda, Italy. And if you've never been there, you should put that on your hit list. It's probably the most beautiful place in the world.
There he is, Malcolm Page, the head of U.S. Sailing, multiple gold medals in the Olympics for his native Australia. Malcolm, thanks for coming in, man. I really appreciate it. And USA, USA.
USA, love it. Thank
Karen,
you.
Karen, good to see you again.
Yes.
Do it
great,
again next
great
week.
Great to be here at 9:37.
Sales Sport Talk with Rick Tittle and Karen Lyle on Sports Byline. Come on back.